Melissa in the Morning spends a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Senator Blumenthal. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me back to the show. Hope you and your listeners are well, too.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that. It has been a rough week again in America after what happened in Nashville. Horrific school shooting, as I know you know. Three children, all age 9, and three staff members killed when a gunman who legally purchased those guns got into the school, and 28 years old, and police were able to take her out 3 minutes after entering the building. But of course, it's another week of discussions. What's the right thing to do? What should be happening? And I find, and I'm sure you feel the same way, we sort of continue to move in cycles, where you've got one side that focuses a lot on guns, the other side that really focuses more on mental health in school, building security. I guess we could start with that. You know, what is in your professional opinion the next step for America to make our kids safer in schools?
You know, Melissa, that morning, Monday, when news about the Tennessee tragedy hit the airwaves, I was shocked with grief. And I thought about Sandy Hook, of course, and our reaction on that day when I went to the firehouse and learned about that tragedy, 20 beautiful children, three great educators. And we still, in Connecticut, of course, are grieving for those families in Connecticut. And these families in Tennessee will be going through the same kind of trauma and recovery that our people have endured. But there is action we can take. And we've shown in Connecticut that certain policies work, like a ban on assault weapons, which probably is out of reach, but we should still fight for it. And then there are actions that have brought us together, including mental health in the Safer Communities Act, a major bill that was passed last August. Senator Murphy and I helped to lead it. Mental health was part of it. So was closing the boyfriend loophole on stalking, as well as red flag statutes encouraging and funding it. Other measures that have proved successful in Connecticut. So I would say we should look to what has worked in Connecticut. What won't work is simply inaction. And I believe strengthening mental health and police resource officers are two steps where we can bolster the ongoing support from the federal government that already is going to states and localities. I've visited the school resource officers in Connecticut around our state, and they perform a very important function, not only sometimes disarming or diffusing conflict, but also serving as role models, as sources of advice. And of course, mental health for kids today is so crucially important. We're going through a mental health crisis in this country for young people after the pandemic, not necessarily all it involving gun violence, but certainly the level of suicides has been alarming and other indications of real problems. So I think we can work on this issue, maybe bring together a bipartisan group as we did on the Safer Communities Act, and, you know, maybe take a crack at safe storage. Ethan's Law in Connecticut has been successful. It's named after Ethan Song, who was accidentally shot in a neighbor's house. I've introduced it in Congress, along with a ban or a limit on the size of magazines that are attached to these assault weapons. You know, if they hold 100 rounds or bullets, they are that much more lethal because the shooter doesn't have to change weapons as the shooter did in Sandy Hook, which enabled a number of those children to escape. So I think there's still measures we can take. I'm not giving up hope. I don't think we can. We need to continue this effort because we can save lives.
Senator Blumenthal, and again, I don't want you speaking on behalf of other people, so feel free to say I'm not going to comment on that. But I think when you see what happened in Nashville, and you see that this person shot through doors, got in without any issue, there were no resource officers, there was no school protection. Now, the headmaster, we have learned, had an incredible plan in place for an active shooter situation, which is why more people were not killed. So kudos to her, unfortunately, one of the people who was taken in this. But the school building itself was so vulnerable. And I know many people are pointing the finger back when there was debate, when Republicans wanted to adjust the bill and add more resource officers and funding to upgrade school security. And Senator Murphy objected to it. And so I'm curious, you know, I'm finding even now that a lot of the news is very skewed in saying this is on the hands of Republicans. This is, you know, we're blaming Republicans for why Nashville essentially happened because we're not passing stricter gun laws. But I'm not seeing where we are also looking at this school was totally vulnerable. And I have heard of schools even here in Fairfield County where side doors are not locked and security cameras are not used and bulletproof glass is not installed. So what about that portion of protecting our kids in a better way? School security and investing in either resource officers or even veterans, getting jobless and homeless veterans back into work by having them work in schools. What do you think about that?
Melissa, I have consistently supported funding school resource officers since Sandy Hook. I have visited schools, and I can tell you in most schools in Connecticut, I can't say every school, but they have a check-in process, a door that all visitors have to use. Many of them have been hardened somewhat. In other words, they've been made more resistant to a shooter entering either through a window or through some other entrance. Remember, we need to keep in mind that there's a balance here. We don't want to turn schools into prison-like fortresses, but there are ways, especially with certain types of glass and other construction, to make them much more resistant to any shooter. So those measures should go forward, and Connecticut has led the way. If you go into a school now, I don't know where recently you have been, but I can't enter a school without signing a book and telling them who I am. Most people know who I am, but the point is you need to identify yourself, and I think that has helped reduce the threat in Connecticut. I'm sort of knocking on wood because I don't want to jinx it, but, you know, these measures do very definitely help. And the effort last August, the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, and I give Senator Murphy a ton of credit for his work on it, was the result of bipartisan cooperation. We worked across the aisle. I worked with Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, on the red flag proposal. We worked with John Cornyn, Republican of Texas. I give them all a lot of credit on the Republican side. It was a joint effort. I think we can use it as a model to move forward. But, you know, the point is, nothing happens in the United States Senate without bipartisan cooperation on this issue. And that's why it's so important.
I agree. We do need bipartisan support. And I think that until we get that, I don't see where we're moving forward, at least on the law side of things. I do, you know, I agree. We did pass something last summer, which was the first time we had done that in a very long time as a nation. But I mean, I can tell you, just to answer your question, Senator Blumenthal, it was a Fairfield school, an early education Fairfield school. I was told by a mother this week that there is a side entrance to that school that parents are paying for good education, that it is left unlocked, sometimes propped open, reminds me a lot of Uvalde, and people can go in and out without signing in, without a camera, and this is in Fairfield, Connecticut. And I've seen
you know, I would say, Melissa, that kind of incident or instance should be reported to the Fairfield Board of Education. My guess is that they have rules and protocols, and maybe, you know, something untoward happened in that particular school. But overall, I think Connecticut is following these procedures. And, you know, these school resource officers, you can't just hire them off the streets. They need training. A lot of them are former.
Well, what do you think about veterans?
Police. Veterans should be hired, absolutely. No one's been a stronger champion of veterans in police forces generally, but also for these security jobs. And I think veterans who are coming out of the military who want to do that kind of work should be given the opportunity. But, you know, there are a lot of jobs that veterans ought to be trained to do. Welding, electricians, pipe fitters. We need people who know how to make things and manufacturing. Veterans certainly should be considered for those school resource jobs. And I think we ought to think more broadly about what's necessary to make America safe. A ban on assault weapons, which I mentioned earlier. Every time one of these weapons is used, there's a mass murder because they are so lethal. Firing them results in such a huge number of rounds going at victims and survivors. And the size of the magazines enables repeated shooting over maybe just seconds, but a lot of ammunition being used in a lethal way.
Senator Blumenthal, I appreciate getting your comments this morning, and I know we'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
So I was reading an article, actually, a couple of years ago, and it was titled 75% of adults in America feel, quote unquote, stuck. And that's personally and professionally. And we're not talking about feeling lonely or disconnected. It's when you feel you are stuck in an instant in time and you can't move on from it. And you almost get to the point of obsessing and harping on it. And you either wait for the next best thing to help you move on, essentially. But do you really move on? Or you essentially crumble. You let that obsession take you down and break you down until you can be built back up again. But does it need to be like that? Does it have to be that way? And the answer, of course, is no. And we're hoping at a younger age, kids especially, can learn to tackle things that are happening in that moment in a healthy way so they can move on in a healthy way and not stay stuck. So this morning we have Stephanie Swantek here of the Be Safe Project out of Bridges Healthcare in Milford. And Stephanie talks to many teens about a lot of topics that can be difficult for mom and dad to talk to them about. But, you know, this idea of being stuck, Stephanie, where did you come up with the concept of talking about, you know, kids being stuck and how to get out of it?
You know, again, I run a clinical sex ed program, right? So it really does intersect both sexual reproductive health and mental health. And a skill that we learn through sexual reproductive health, like many, right, knowing your body, knowing yourself, knowing your worth, but it's also communication skills, right? And so when we can, when we have communication skills, we can obviously express ourselves better. We have more confidence. We know who's listening, and we know how to listen. We also can pick up social cues. It creates healthier environments. But also in regards to what you're referring to, like, quote, unquote, being stuck, you know, then it can lead to an obsession, a compulsion, depression, anxiety, et cetera. Communication can be a way out of this. And so, you know, currently I'm seeing with students is just really how by them being able to picture or identify what they're feeling, it helps them start moving through this process. And so just even using the analogy or the picture of a maze and then people, right, ourselves getting stuck in this maze, and this maze represents a problem. right, a struggle. And all we're doing is thinking about it. And we're not moving through it. And so that's what we're seeing with a lot of students, but also how our communication skills and being able to identify, wait, this is what I'm feeling, and this is how I've been thinking about this thing or this person or this rejection or whatever it may be. I've been thinking about it on a daily basis for a very long time, and being able to identify that, and then we can seek help and learn to work through it and process it.
So, Stephanie, forgive me, but dumb it down even more for me. Give me an example. You don't obviously have to use a student name, but like, give me a common example. What is something that a student may go through, high school years, of course, because that's who you're working with, that they would be stuck on if not for learning how to identify it, communicate about it, and move forward?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of students, this could be an experience that they've dealt with in the past, but it's affecting their current state, right? So this could be an assault. This could be a breakup. This could be grief. So anything that we can't move through. So it's something that constantly haunts us, but we're constantly thinking about it. And the way that we can start moving through this and what we work with students around is, and again, I know I continually say this word, but the whole idea of being grateful. And so what we continually obsess about something we've been through or a person we lost or a breakup or a rejection, or maybe not going to college, maybe not going to the college that we want, whatever it may be. Instead of obsessing about this one thing over again, thinking about what have we accomplished? What am I grateful for? And then shifting our focus on what we have and less on what we don't have. And so what we do is we think about what we're grateful for, but then we stop students or clients in the process of listing what they're grateful for. And then we want them to hold on to the feeling of when they say, I'm grateful for this. Instead of saying it, I want them to hold on to that feeling of why they're grateful for it, like absorbing that grateful, whether it's having a dog or the sunshine, but it's holding on to that warmth of the sunshine and holding on to the thought of petting their dog and cuddling with their dog. So they're holding on to the sensations and the feelings of those things that they're grateful for. So it shifts their perspective and their energy and their focus onto things that they feel and they have control over.
So we're talking to Stephanie Swantek this morning of the Be Safe Project in Bridges Healthcare in Milford, and talking about not staying stuck. And for her, for the students she serves, helping them to identify and communicate through some of those issues. And, you know, let's take one example. Let's take a breakup, for example. You know, without learning to identify, Stephanie, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if without learning to identify that issue, do you often find that some of these situations that you could go through in your young adult life carry through into your adult life? So in a breakup, for example, there are people who think, okay, I broke up with that person, I was sad about it, but I found, you know, the next Prince Charming, and so I'm over it. But maybe you didn't actually heal. Like, a person doesn't replace what, you know, experience you went through and the feelings you have with it. Unless you address those issues, you can't fully move on. At least that's what I always thought was sort of the situation there. Would you agree, like, if you don't identify an issue, it carries on with you?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, an example of what you're saying, too, is even I work, you know, with a lot of students whose parents are survivors of domestic violence. Mm. And then they themselves find themselves, and may not be physically violent, but it's like emotionally and psychologically abusive. Mm-hmm. And they find themselves just being drained and put down and feeling guilty, and that they're always doing something wrong, they're the problem, or their partner's trying to control them. And they kind of give in to that person because they're so afraid of losing someone else. So that's a perfect example of, I grew up in this environment, and now
I'm becoming part of that environment.
Yes, and I don't talk to that parent anymore, right? I cut that parent off. But now my relationship mirrors what my parents went through.
Mm. Yeah, that's really, really difficult. And Stephanie, another thing that I wanted to identify is the fact that we now live in such a technology-driven world. What is your concern professionally when it comes to our phones and the fact that there's a little bit of kind of big brother technology? You know, I know for myself, I could be talking about just the other day I was talking about something that I wanted to buy Chase for his birthday party. And all of a sudden, you know, I had an idea for a theme. All of a sudden, I'm getting ad after ad after ad for that theming. And I think to myself, okay. And you know, that goes for anything, that technology can hear what you're talking about. And then all of a sudden, it pops up all the time as suggested ads or whatever. And people will misunderstand that it's your technology being very smart and intuitive to you. You're almost confirming that your obsession is actually a fact, or that the thing that you're staying stuck on, that this is where you're supposed to be is staying in this place when in fact you shouldn't be. It's actually not healthy.
Yeah, yes, everything you're saying, and then in addition to how technology makes everything so much more accessible, in addition to when we're trying to forget, get over, process, cope, anything, or try to work through something and leave something or put something in our past, it makes it that much more difficult because someone just a Google search away, or a Facebook message away, or so-and-so's friends with so-and-so, or whatever it may be, but it just makes everything feel so much more close. And so the same thing, being able to identify those healthy boundaries, which it makes it more difficult because you need to be really good at discipline and understanding how, you know, using, I don't know, Instagram or a certain social media, how, you know, certain amount of time, spending a certain amount of time a day, how it actually impacts our mental health. Like, how did I feel prior to going on Facebook and then spending a certain amount of time? And now how do I feel afterwards? And being even able to identify that is also hard. And especially for, you know, again, a student, a young person, it's really hard. It's really addictive as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would be your suggestion, Steph? Do you mind just kind of sharing some pointers? Like, what are some ways that you can identify, start doing that, even as an adult? Like, I mean, it is interesting. Sometimes we feel there's such a separation between the younger generation and what we are doing as adults. But I find sometimes we didn't get the lessons that maybe we should have when we were in high school, and they very much could be prevalent to our lives today, especially if you struggle with being stuck. So what are some things that maybe you teach your students or you would recommend to adults today who are listening, saying, you know what, I do feel I'm in an unhealthy place and I'm stuck on something, I'm obsessing over something. How do you start to overcome it? You know, when you talk about identifying and talking about it, what do you mean by that?
So this always goes back to the basics, always, always, always. And, again, it is slowing down. It is unplugging. It is thinking about who you spend your time with and how those, can you have open dialogue about these things around, with other people, and how do they respond to you? Do they listen to you? Do they make space for you? All of those things, and also, again, your relationship, even with your body, and kind of releasing some of this pent up energy, tension, stress, even just like small things like that. And in regards to creating more awareness and which then as a result creates more gratitude. And part of that, just moving your body so that you're creating space, for releasing of these things, these memories, you know, these fears, these rejections, so creating, getting rid of them, and then creating space for new experiences and healing and whoever you want to become, or just being in the present. But just starting with your body, and then as a result, that will then impact your relationships around you. And then as a result, that will then affect you and your overall state of health and wellness and well-being.
Stephanie Swantek, always appreciate you. Is there a way people can contact you if they have any further questions about this?
Always, yeah. Feel free to reach out. My work cell phone, 475-202-2827, and I work for Bridges Healthcare.
All right, Stephanie, always appreciate having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
Heard on High Ridge, Long Ridge, and all over Stamford, it's Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
So we hear about this all the time, unfortunately, in the news, and we don't really pay attention to local efforts as much as we can. This is probably not going to be front page news. But I wake up this morning, any of you in group chats with your family, is that something that you like or maybe you avoid if you're like my husband? So we have a group chat among all the Shecks, and I woke up this morning and I've been trying really hard not to pay attention to my phone when I first wake up because I think it just gets me distracted and I fall behind on my work and so whatever. So I get to work. I have not checked my phone still on the drive to work. I come in, I get ready. I'm starting my work. I'm doing my show. I'm prepping the news. And I just sit down to start recording the news, and I look at 4:30. I look at my phone for the first time. I see 29 text messages. I'm like, oh, it's got to be a family chat. It's got to be that. And it is. And I'm scrolling up to see what's going on. And this incredible story is told right there in the family chat. And I thought, you know what? Especially this week with all the bad news we've been talking about. You know, we started off the week with something horrific that went on in Nashville, and a lot of hard conversations have been going on all week long. And I thought, this is a nice story. This is one of those stories that we could really use more of. And it is not one, but two birds that were rescued out of netting yesterday. And it was done, I would say, with a lot of effort, actually, by my sister and her boyfriend in their 20s, you know, out enjoying their day. And they took it upon themselves to really not just rescue one of the birds, but then follow the second one and make sure that they were set free as well. So joining me this morning is my sister. She's on the drive in to her workplace right now. And I said, will you please call in? Because, man, we could just use something bright and newsworthy this morning. And it's right here in Stamford, Connecticut. So good morning, Annie Lynn. How are you? Do I have you here? Oh, yes, yeah. I do. I'm in control of you here. It's me. It's hi. It's me. Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So tell us, first of all, what were you and Jake doing? This was what, yesterday evening?
Yeah. So we both got home from work. It was about 5:45-ish. And we usually go to the park that's really close to our house just for a nice stroll. And you know, we started walking, and like in the distance, you know, we saw what looked like a bird almost like falling over every like sort of second that it tried to take a step. So knowing Jake, he runs over and he sees that there's two birds attached to one fishing line, and it's pretty coarse, the line, so it was really hard to break. We tried biting it with our teeth. Of course, we didn't come prepared. We had no scissors. We were looking for a sharp seashell, but really we couldn't find anything. To which Jake was holding the bird down with his bare hands, and I just went sprinting kind of like a crazy person, asking people if they had a pocket knife, if they had, you know, anything sharp in their pockets. And of course, no one was giving me anything until I told the story about how two birds were kind of locked together with a line. And this one guy was like, oh, actually, I do have a pocket knife, and followed me over.
Right, because probably at first he's thinking, why would you want my knife? What, are you going to attack me? And you're like, no, I just want to save some birds. But, okay, so you get somebody who's willing to help you. Okay, so he's got a pocket knife.
So I'm running over, and I told Jake, you know, I found a guy with a pocket knife, and he follows, and then he snipped one of the, like, the part of the line from one bird that Jake had already got the line, like, around its wing off. So that one was set free. But then once he snipped it, the other one got free, but the line was still around both of its wings. So obviously Jake and I are looking at it and really sad because it's well out there into the water, and we're like, this stinks, like it's probably going to die because it can't flap its wings. And the other one was flapping, like, finally free. So I knew that I had a friend that lived right on the water, right up the road from the park that we live at. And I called her immediately and was like, hey, are you home? Is there any way we could borrow your canoe? And she was like, I'm not home, but actually you're in luck. Our canoe's in the backyard, and there's two paddles there with it. So Jake and I sprinted over to her house. We grabbed the canoe, put it in the water, got into it, and then we started paddling after the duck or the geese, whatever it was. It was crazy, but it couldn't go too fast. So we were paddling pretty fast, and it couldn't get away. Pinned it to shore, and almost flipped the canoe getting out. But we both hopped out into the water. Jake grabbed it again, and I brought a seatbelt cutter this time because it's all we had. And I was able to snip the line, and he was able to get it off around the wings. And then it was set free, and we made sure it could flap its wings by, like, giving it a little scare just to make sure that it wasn't, you know, still tied around in any way. But then, yeah, it was free, and we got none of it on video, so that was great.
But you know what? I love that. That's why this needs to be in front page news, and we just don't get to hear about these kinds of stories. And I think it's okay. I know we live in a society where it's like, oh, if you don't get it on the gram, it didn't happen. But I think, first of all, I do know this is my sister, by the way, for anyone who's just tuning in. My sister and her boyfriend, who's an avid bird watcher. I mean, when I say my future brother-in-law, I will go in and ask him how his day is, and he'll say, it's fine. Can I show you the owl I saw the other day? And I'm like, oh my God, Jake. Okay, sure. I mean, they love nature. They love being outdoors. But to go through the, you know, I could see, all right, a bird is caught, and the community effort of getting it free. But to then pursue the second, you just don't hear about a lot of people taking the time to do that after a long work day and just thinking it's somebody else's problem. And I thought you both showed an example of making it your problem in that moment and saying, hey, we can solve this. We can solve this. It's not just a bird. This is completely unfair. And at the end of the day, the reason that they are caught is because humans are careless. And that line should not have been wrapped around two birds at that time. And so I just wanted to thank you and Jake, obviously, for what you did, but also for bringing some bright news in what has been a very dark week of news, Annie Lynn. So thank you both. And for the first time in a long time, I was thrilled that I woke up to 29 text messages. This was a good group chat. I'm sure Derek regrets not being in the group chat for the first time ever, but it's a great story. It really is.
Yeah, no, it was really, it was a great experience to experience. So I'm happy that I made your morning.
You did. You did. I think you made a lot of people's morning. So I thank you. I appreciate it. And I hope you have a great day at work. And I'll probably call you later because that's basically what I do every day. So I love you.
It's part of the schedule. I love you.
It is a part of the schedule. I'll talk to you around 4:30 p.m. sharp.
That's right.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
If you've ever watched the movie Bambi, you'll know that wildlife is very busy. Lots of big changes that come with the springtime, and it is officially spring. With some heads up this morning, we've got Greg Dancho of the Beardsley Zoo back. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. That was a great story this morning with your sister.
Did you love that story?
Yeah. I actually live that story.
I'm sure you have. You know, I thought of you. I thought, wow, I'm sure Greg has taken fishing line off of a bird or 700.
And it's not easy to do, especially when they're fighting. I did it with a cormorant a few years ago.
Oof.
And right here in Bell's Pond. That it got hooked up in fishing line, and it was tough, you know, trying to get that bird. But it does feel so good when you release it and it flies away. It's really a nice, good feeling.
Yeah, it was.
But
yeah.
It's also fishing season's coming up. It's spring. Fishing season's coming up, and I have to remind people, you know, your fishing line. If you're out there fishing, make sure that fishing line is taken away with you, taken back, you know, to your home, put in recycling bins. We have those in bins around the pond here in Beardsley Park. There are little units that you can put your used fishing line, or, you know, you get those snarls in it. You can put it in these containers, and then we'll clean them out and get them recycled, because that is really a danger for those animals in the ponds and the fish.
And it's the same thing, and I always get made fun of here at work, but I know people agree with me. Whenever you get those 4-packs, 6-packs, 8-packs of either soda, beer, whatever it is, those rings.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You have got to take that extra 20 seconds, either find a pair of scissors, or we do a competition in our house. We see how fast we can rip them on our own. Always, always please cut those up, because my gosh, you never know when they're going to fly out of a dump truck or whatever, and they get wrapped around animals' necks, paws, wings all the time. So please cut
exactly.
them up. Yeah.
Well, and it's really important, because what we're looking at right now, it's spring's coming. Spring's here, actually. Spring is here. Mm-hmm. And the fish ladder over in Beardsley in the pond here we just talked about, the alewives and blueback herring are be coming up there pretty soon. I'm watching and waiting for their arrival, because once those herrings start to come up the fish ladder, I've already seen the osprey come back, and the eagles are circling around the pond. The common mergansers are in the pond right now looking for those, the spring arrival of their food source. And so, again, back to what you just said, when there's osprey and the eagles flying around looking for those fish, anything in that water that they can encounter could be a problem.
Yeah, no question. So we've got the birds coming home. They're exhausted. They're hungry. What else? What other animals are you keeping an eye out for?
Well, what I get a kick out of every spring is the big night. We call it the big night. What's the big night? The big night is when it's kind of 55 degrees out. It's raining lightly it's raining steadily. And I take my grandsons, Lucas and Wesley, and then pretty soon Isla, my granddaughter, out into where the wetlands are, and we watch the migration of the amphibians.
It's like a Disney movie in real life. It's pretty amazing. It is. It's cool.
The salamanders are moving. The spotted salamanders and the other salamanders are moving from the woodlands down into the ponds, the vernal ponds, the vernal pools we talked about before. And we just were out there a couple of days ago where they had that rainy night, and we walked down there, and there was a couple things going on, not much. And I said, "Oh, we're going to get skunked tonight. I can't believe it." Then it started raining a little harder, and then all of a sudden, just like in the movie, all the wood frogs started coming out of the woods across the street, and we're able to see about 20, 30 wood frogs as they're making their way to the pond. And I, that to me is kind of magical to see that happen. So when you're driving around in a wet night, wet warm night, keep an eye out for those frogs on the road. So if you can slow down a little bit, give them a chance to pop over there. And also, we want to make sure that, especially with fertilizer, people have started thinking about fertilizing their lawn, getting fertilizers down, pesticides into there. Again, keep it in a low boil, because these things get into the waterways and absorbed by the amphibian skin, and that, because they are the canary in coal mines, they pick everything up through their skin, and we want to make sure that they stay safe. So again, right now, that's moving. Turtles are now moving. Turtles are now box turtles and spotted turtles and other kind of snapping turtles are starting to move to their breeding grounds, starting to move to where they're going to start laying eggs. So, again, watch those animals on the road. Slow down a little bit. Keep an eye out for them. If you can, help them cross the road safely, do so. Again, always point them in the direction where they're heading, because a lot of people will see them crossing the road, pick them up, put them back on the other side of the road where they're coming, and then they'll continue
going that
way.
And they're like,
well,
I guess I'll just start again. And you're like, no, come on. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah. So that is important. People are starting to see the coyotes are starting to come out. The pups are going to be coming out soon, so you're going to see coyotes. You're going to see foxes. Foxes are now in the breeding cycle right now, so their pups will be out pretty soon, or the kits. We call them kits, not pups. And again, you're going to see a lot of activity going on really soon as this weather continues to, well, today not so much warm, but as the weather's been pretty warm, these animals are going to start moving. So keep an eye and be safe. Stay away, give them the space. We talked about this before. If you see something in the yard and it's a fox or a coyote or something like that, enjoy it from the window. Please, please, please don't use your cell phone to go try to take a selfie with that animal. Those animals do not like that. They have what's called a fight or flight response, which means that if they can run away, they will. But, you corner them.
If they can attack you, they're going to do it. Right, exactly. They're going to defend themselves, absolutely.
Give them their space. And spring, we know spring is coming at the zoo, because there's increased sightings of our stroller moms are coming out, our stroller families. So we're seeing
the wild
stroller
moms are out in the wild. You've got to keep an eye out for them.
We keep an eye out them. We got David Attenborough out there watching for them. It's going to be a show on TV pretty soon.
Yeah.
The stroller mom migration.
Love that.
And then And then one of the things that we're going to keep an eye out for ourselves here at the zoo, we have our turkeys. We have those minor breed Narragansett turkeys in our farmyard, which are minor breeds. They're heritage breed, which means they're actually endangered. Mm-hmm. We have our hen right now is laying on 15 eggs.
Baby turkeys!
Pretty soon we'll be having little baby turkeys coming out. And we're really excited about that because, again, spring is when you want to see some babies coming out. We talked about this before. The zoo does not, just have babies in the spring just to have babies. We only do it for reasons for conservation and, mm-hmm. and education. And these guys, are endangered species, so they are a breed. It's something that we want to have babies, so we're excited about having turkeys for the first time, really, in a long time. I don't think we've had turkey hatching in many, many years, so we're really excited about that.
Well, there's an awful lot going on in your backyard, in your communities, and certainly at the zoo, and we always appreciate Greg Dancho being on top of every single thing. So I thank you so much, Greg. Happy spring, and we'll talk
thank
again
you,
next
Melissa.
Week.
Yeah, happy spring. Hey, first baseball games today, so keep the TVs going.
That's right.
Go opening, opening season, too.
I'm excited.
Or
very,
Mets.
Very excited.
Or Mets
for you. Red Sox for my husband. I could go everyone. Go everyone. Good luck with the pitching. That's the thing that everyone's worried about.
There you go. That's exactly right.
Oh, the bitch timer. We'll see. Greg, thank you so much, and we will talk again next week.
Have a great weekend.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. You too.